Hello, all of you out there in Radioland. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, you hope your device stays locked onto our website at kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. Speaking of lunch, the pandemic has really rocked the restaurant scene in the past 3 years. Nothing is the same as it was before the pandemic. First off, quite a few restaurants simply gave up and folded over those long, disease-ridden years. Restaurants were forced to close during the first scary years. Some owners couldn't afford to ride it out. They couldn't afford to keep paying staff, even with unemployment checks the staff was receiving. When restaurants finally got the green light to reopen, there were all sorts of restrictions about customers wearing masks and showing proof of vaccination, etc. It was not exactly easy. Then there was, and is, the question of where do you get help? It seems like competent help is really hard to find in the restaurant business, particularly in a smaller market such as Jefferson County. It's a challenging situation. Still, it appears that some of our food businesses are thriving, despite the pandemic-related obstacles. My guests today are two young entrepreneurs who seem to be successfully riding the waves in this challenging time. My guests today are Mike and Heather Harbin, the owners of Mo Chili, the barbecue joint up on Sims Way. Somehow, during these rocky years, Heather and Mike managed to grow Mo Chili from a food truck to an actual restaurant, although takeout is still a staple for this young business. So welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. Hello.
So before we get to the part about what Mo Chili is doing today, let's let our listeners know a little bit about you. With two guests, we're just going to bounce back and forth a little bit. I usually start literally at the beginning. Like, we'll start with you, Heather. Were you born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
I wasn't born here, but I moved to Port Townsend when I was in sixth grade.
Well, that sort of counts.
Yeah.
So you went to high school here?
I did, yep.
And so what did your peers think of you in high school?
Well, I was lucky enough to have a great group of girlfriends who I was super close with, and that got me through high school.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Mike, what about you? You also from Washington?
No, I'm from Lampasas, Texas.
Aha. That's a bit of a trip from here. So were you an only child?
No. I've got five sisters.
Five sisters and one boy. Well, maybe you learned a lot about women by watching your sisters.
it drove me to the woods, and I ended up in the Marine Corps.
Ah, the Marine Corps. Okay. Well, that's challenging. So what did you do during your years with the Marines?
Well, I went in 1989, and I became a survival equipment rigger. Basically, I would rig survival equipment for pilots and air crewmen for 9 years.
Wow.
I'd work on jets, parachutes, the parachutes that go in the jets, the communication systems, oxygen systems, and their helmets, and all the gear that they use to survive should they have to eject.
You must have to have a lot of training to do that.
There's a substantial amount of training initially, and then ongoing training.
Okay. And did you do this all from one location?
Multiple locations. I was stationed at Cherry Point, North Carolina, my first tour. And my second tour, I was at Andrews Air Force Base. We worked on the F-18s up there across from the President's Hangar. Outside of that, I went all around the country and all around the world, Japan, the Philippines, Korea, Okinawa, Guam, Wake Island, Norway, Scotland, Iceland, Arctic Circle twice.
That's so pretty impressive.
It's pretty cool.
Well, so when you were in some of these exotic locations, did you have any time off to actually look around, or were you just
Sure. We worked regular hours. There were times we'd work, you know, quite a bit without days off. But, you know, at the same time, you know, we could take time off and tour around the country and see the landscape and experience the culture, the different cultures. And
so looking back, what are one or two things that stand out from you for your foreign travel?
As far as where I would go back to or what I'd like to see or take someone? Well, you know, I think I'd love to visit the Arctic Circle again. That was quite interesting. Japan was quite impressive. I mean, it's a very well manicured country. You know, the castles and a lot of the gardens were quite unique. But I mean, we saw some pretty cool places. But I mean, if you had have a couple standouts, it'd be a coin toss between both of those.
Okay. And you mentioned you were in the Marines for 9 years.
Yes, ma'am.
And so why did you decide to leave the Marines?
Just wanted a lifestyle change. You know, it's kind of we were in the most – my first squadron was probably the most deployed squadron in the Marine Corps. And, you know, I got to my second squadron, and we were deploying quite a bit. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to get out. It was the time – 9 years was when you decide if you want to make a career of it. You know, 9, 10 years is when you're going to make a decision if you're going to retire or, you know, go do something else. And so at the time, I just didn't see, you know, making a career out of it and wanted to go try something else.
And what?
But I do miss it.
Yeah. Did you have a clear-cut plan for what you would do after the Marines?
Absolutely not.
Okay. And what year was this?
That was 1997.
So let's catch up with Heather. Bring you up to 1997. What were you doing during the year up until then?
In 1997, I was living in San Diego.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what had you been doing for the – you left Port Townsend. You went to university. Where?
I went to Whitworth College for 2 years, and then I took a year off, and then I transferred to UW, and I graduated from UW. And then spent some time in San Diego.
Doing what?
Just working and living in San Diego. Yeah.
What'd you get your degree in?
I got my degree in international communications.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I just really liked the area of San Diego.
Yeah, that's a beautiful place.
Something different than Port Townsend, so it took me there.
Yes. Okay. And at some point, however, you two met each other. So how did that happen?
Yeah, we met in 1999, actually. A few years later, and we met at Progressive Insurance in a training class.
So you had independently decided to take up the insurance business?
Well, she lived in California.
Right.
I lived in Virginia at the time.
Right.
So. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it was just a career path. You know,
okay.
I was working at a temporary housing company and was getting tired of doing that and was looking for a segue and ended up looking at Travelers, and they had a competitive pay and it was an interesting career. So I just thought I would try that, and led Mike and I to meeting each other. Yeah.
So you actually met in a training class?
Yes. Yep.
How long was the class? How well did you get to know each other during this class?
The training class was for 3 weeks long.
Not
very long, but we had a good connection, and this was all before, you know, Facebook, and there probably was email, but not readily, you know, mm-hmm. It wasn't something that most people did on a regular basis unless they were at work or something. So we talked on the phone every day for a year, and
But we do study groups, and we'd study together, and that just wasn't one thing that I was good at, you know, it's just self-study. I would have to memorize everything. That's how I got through things. Mm-hmm. And so the group of us would get together and just really appreciated how, you know, caring and careful Heather was helping me through that part. And so that was, you know, a big part of us keeping in touch. And
so you were physically, though, spread out. You were in D.C. You were in San Diego. How did you manage to negotiate being in the same city?
Progressive had a program where you could transfer from different offices. Certain offices were in need of certain types of employees, and the office that Mike was at was one of those offices that were looking for additional employees. And I thought to myself, well, I might as well go ahead and see if I can transfer. They guaranteed my job back after doing a 2-year commitment. And I had family and extended college friends who lived back east as well. So I wasn't all on my own, per se.
Right.
And I rolled the dice and said, okay, let's go see what happens. So here we are several years later.
Obviously, it worked out.
It did work out. It did work out. So
you worked together in the D.C. area for a number of years.
Yeah. Yeah, we moved to Maryland in 2003.
Yep.
Yeah, 2003. Okay. And then we lived there for 2 years, and we moved back to Texas, where Mike is from, in 2005.
How did you pick Texas versus California? I mean, you could have gone back to San Diego, I suppose.
Yeah, at that time we were married and had our first son, Morgan, and we were tired of the cold and the blizzards and the snow, and Mike had been away from home for a really long time and wanted to get back in touch with his family and his dad, and so I started looking around in Texas to see what offices had openings, and was able to find one in Austin, and they made two positions for us. We were doing different things at the time at Progressive, but we were able to make it work and transfer, and we were there for 10 years.
We took lesser positions, but the cost of living was different, so we didn't really have to make that much of an adjustment.
Yeah, I've never been to Austin, but I hear it's a great city.
It's a pretty cool town. Yeah, no question.
So you were there for 10 years.
Yep.
At some point, I think when we were talking the other day, you told me that actually the kernel of the Mo Chili operation happened in Texas while you were still in the insurance business. Can you tell us about that evolution?
Weekend warrior. Yeah, weekend warrior type barbecue cooking. And how it kind of happens, you know, just like a lot of folks in Texas, I mean, you get a smoker, you make barbecue, you know, it's always a big conversation around who makes the best barbecue or whose is better. I never really got into that. I always just made it the way I liked it in my backyard. And I met a friend through work who cooked barbecue and would go to competitions. So we'd chit chat about that all the time. I was curious about it, but right. I didn't ever think I'd be a competition barbecue guy.
Well, wait a minute. Let's talk about the name. Tell us how you came up with the name. It wasn't because you make great chili.
Well, we were going to a barbecue competition.
Right.
And we didn't have a team name.
Uh-uh.
And so in the Marine Corps, we always used nicknames. And so I got a pencil and a piece of paper and threw a couple of things down. And eventually it occurred to me, oh, we'll just, you know, use a nickname of sorts. And I didn't want to use mine. And then I was like, well, what about the kids? So I just threw their two nicknames together, and Morgan and Bryce are our two sons.
Right.
Their nicknames are Mo and Chili. Morgan is Mo, Bryce is Chili. Whenever Bryce was a baby, he and my dad used to play the tickle game, and my dad would tickle Bryce all over the belly or whatever, and make him laugh and call him big silly. You know, and Bryce, no, Papa, you big chili. Bryce couldn't say silly; he would say chili, and so he became Big Chili around the neighborhood.
Okay.
And if you saw anybody, you know, come to the house or we were out on a walk, he'd run up and tickle him in the belly or the butt or whatever he could reach. he just wanted to see people laugh. Bryce was born laughing.
Okay.
He cried, then laughed. And then every day after that, he's just been a funny kid. It's been a problem for him in school, but he became Big Chili, you know. And of course, it was just, I don't know, it was a neat nickname, I remember thinking. And
right.
So we'd call Morgan Big Mo and Bryce Big Chili. And
so
I don't know.
That's
just took Mo and Chili and
came
up with a good team name.
When you were talking about these barbecue competitions, you told me that it might range from 10 to 100 or maybe even 200 entries.
Yeah.
But tell us about the prizes. This is the part that really surprised me.
No, we never hit any of the big ones, for sure.
Yeah.
But, it was good to go compete and just go see how you stack up to other competitors, especially in Texas.
Right.
You know, and whether it's a 10 or a 12 or 20 person entry or 100, you're still going to go up against some good barbecue guys. You know,
right.
And so, you know, depending on how big the competition or who the sponsors are, I mean, you could have $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in cash and prizes.
That's a lot.
And so that's kind of cool. But like I said, I mean, I never got a grand champion. I got, you know, some pretty good calls. I got a lot of top 10 calls and some top 5 calls. And always got final table and chicken. So I can make some good chicken.
Well, you know, but it's also, it's such a cult thing, really. It's in the local press a lot. So your name, the name of the team would be, you know,
Well, I think our team name was probably overshadowed by a lot of the big guys and all the regulars out there. But it was still fun to go, still fun to compete. And I still keep in touch with a lot of those guys today. And the barbecue community in Texas is there's something to be said about that. Even to be just a small part of it is a big thing, and that I hold near and dear to my heart. And I think it's important for our company to be connected to that. I don't think anybody that's anybody in the barbecue world in Texas did it all on their own. That's what makes it special there, because they help each other. You know, you could put in a phone call to any one of the guys on the Texas Top 50 list that comes out every 4 years, Texas Monthly Top 50, and they're probably going to help you. If you leave a message, they'll probably call you back and help you. I'd be surprised if they didn't.
It's really nice.
And that's happened, you know, and before we even opened up, when we were back in the business park, I went and did some interviews with a lot of the famous pitmasters there in Central Texas that are on those lists. And they opened me with, welcome me back to the pit area. And we'd sit there and have interviews.
Well, so you at some point started selling your barbecue. You weren't just competing. You were actually selling it back in Texas.
Yeah, that was illegally. Yeah. My driveway.
Driveway sales, yes.
We'd have a little barbecue co-op on the front porch. And we had a hedgerow in the front porch, and we'd have like 4 or 5 coolers out on the front porch. We'd take orders all during the week, and I'd say, hey, I'm cooking this weekend. Who wants anything? And hopes that, it got to where it was pretty busy, and we'd only, want to get 10, 15 customers, because it was a pretty good load. And I ended up eventually doing it all by myself. So if they didn't show up or they weren't there at the time we were going to leave when it was done, I'd start in the morning between 2 and 3 a.m. And I'd just leave it on the front porch on one of those coolers and tell them which cooler their food was in. They'd either pay me before or pay me next week at work.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that was a lot of work. Did you continue doing full-time insurance work too, or did you?
Yeah. We kept doing that. And then, eventually the calling to bring Heather home came. Unfortunately, her dad died of cancer in 2014. And we'd been kind of, trying to decide what we were going to do with our lives and, did we need to make a change or things like that. But I woke up one day and I had a stroke in my sleep, and there was just some things that we needed to change. And, I feel like I probably did it just working too much or stressing out about work, and thought, if I'm going to die working, might as well die doing what I love. And so it was an easy decision whenever, Heather's mom found herself up here kind of by herself. Her sister's down in Seattle, but he'd been trying to talk us into coming up here and selling barbecue for years, And so we're like, let's do it. We talked and, we had 17-year careers. We had a nice big house, in-ground pool, everything we want, company cars, and we gave it all up, sold our house, and had this $50,000 food trailer built, and we bought it brand new, so there wouldn't be any excuses, just in case we failed. We didn't want any excuse. So it was used or whatever.
Where did you find this trailer?
We had it built in Jacksonville, Florida.
Wow, that was a challenge, and so you then flew down to get it?
No, I drove our barbecue pit to Jacksonville and dropped it off. When we left Texas, Heather took the boys and she drove up to Washington, and I drove to Jacksonville, dropped off the barbecue pit on a flatbed trailer, turned around, came back to Texas, camped out on a buddy's couch, cooked for another buddy the next day, and then the next day drove up to Washington and waited for the food trailer to be done. And May or June of 2015, when it was done, I drove back to Jacksonville, picked up the 8,000-pound food truck. Wow. I'd never pulled a trailer that heavy in my life.
So it was basically completed to your specs, right?
Correct. We with the help of the design team at M&R Trailers in Jacksonville, they helped us figure out how we wanted to have it set up. So everything on there is put in a specific spot for a specific reason.
Okay, and so you drove it here to Port Townsend.
Yep.
And where did you put it first?
We started out at the Discovery Bay store. Casey Gribble owned the Discovery Bay store just down from Fat Smitty's over there. We set up there for as much as we could every other day for about a month or two, and we really didn't know how much food to cook or what. So we made a small prep each day, wrote down what we prepped, and wrote down what didn't sell. We'd open a day and we'd close a day. We'd open a day and close a day just to figure out what we did wrong or what we could do better. Right. Just give ourselves some feedback. And so we kept a little logbook, and that helped us decide what to do the next day or the next week. And,
well, there's a lot of traffic there, but
there's 25,000 plus cars a day that go by there every day, but they're on the way somewhere or on the way from somewhere. So they weren't stopping a lot. But we did actually, we have customers today that were one of our first customers on that trailer at that stop.
Okay. So yeah. You basically, though, observed there wasn't quite enough business at that location for you. So what was next?
We moved in town. We hit the Wednesday market. We had a stop with where we made a connection with the Port Townsend Brewery with Kim and Guy over at the Port Townsend Brewery. And they've had us over there for years. Then we got connected and hooked up with the Saturday market. And we really loved going to the Saturday market. They really made us feel, you know, like a part of the community.
Right. And you also ended up at some of the bigger events like Wooden Boat and, you know.
Yep. We do a Wooden Boat Festival, a film festival. Eventually, we got set up with Centrum. Carl's Building Supply has had us, I want to say, since 2016 or 2017. Well, first year, we did two events. I kind of wanted to do a test drive to see, you know, give us two chances to see if we could make it work. And both went well. And then so we became their go-to vendor for several years up until the pandemic hit. And even then, they still call us now to do events for those guys. We love going there. They always make us feel great as well.
Well, so during the period of time where you were sort of moving from event to event, that must be pretty stressful to...
It was. Yeah, we were doing it the app. We've built this business, like Heather, we were talking about the other day, is we've done it the absolute hardest way possible. And it's because we didn't know how. And certainly if you start to show any type of success, you know, there's not a lot of people that are going to, you know, catapult you forward. They're going to wait and see if you actually do it first. But yeah, we'd be running anywhere from 3 to 5 days in a row. I'd get up in the morning between 3 and 4 a.m., go to the kitchen, pack out, drive out to Hadlock, 15 minutes, and pick up the trailer, hook it up in the middle of the night, go set it up on location, typically in the dark, get everything going, get the pit going, start cooking where I was going to be that day at that location.
Well, you now have a permanent location up on Sims Way. How did that happen?
Well, we've got some friends of ours that are investors, and they've been kind of, you know, watching what we've been doing and looking at ways they can help us. Over the course of the years, we had a list of about 9 or 10 people that wanted to invest in our company, and we really just didn't know how to deal with that. But one of them kind of grabbed us by the shirt one day and said, "Hey, look, you're back in the business park. You've got that little thing. You can do much better out here in this spot." And so he wanted us to go and look at this building, which had nothing in it. It wasn't even a certified kitchen. It was just a serving restaurant before. That was it. You couldn't prepare anything in it. So he wanted us to renovate this building. So they invested in the company, made us a loan, and we spent all of last year doing the renovation on it. And we passed our first inspection in March of this year.
Okay. And so for a while, you were operating the truck in essentially the ground there, and you were simultaneously renovating the building.
At the same time.
And so now you have the building open, and since March, you said. Yeah. So it really is pretty brand new.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
So, Mike, can you give us an idea of what your volume of business is like?
Sure. I think back when we were on the food truck, we were probably, I don't know, it's just depending on what day it was, where we're at, maybe somewhere between 40 and 90 customers a day, depending on, you know, whether it's just a retail stop or as it was an event, which would be much bigger. But here now we're averaging, if you take all the months combined, we average somewhere between 150 and 165 transactions a day. And so that's not necessarily a one meal transaction. It's just basically a cover, you know. So we've had as many as 225, 250 just out of the store.
Right. And of course, we are in the winter months right now. And obviously, you and all the other restaurant types in town grow more.
The dust will start settling on those numbers probably in the 100 to 135 person a day range.
So do you think you have a good handle on estimating how much meat to cook?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've got data from some of our worst days, which was $90 a day.
That hurts.
And what the temperature was that day, how dark it was, and how cold it was. We just pull from, you know, all the data, all the notes that we've written each day that we were open, whether we did good or bad. We write down what we prepped, and every time we have a like kind quality day, we just look at those prep numbers and go off of that.
Okay.
Add or subtract 5-10%.
Okay, sounds good. Some of the numbers are pretty amazing. Like you happened to say the other day that you go through between 1,000 and 1,200 pounds of meat a week.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And that's not including chickens.
Yeah.
that seems like a lot to me.
It's a lot of food.
Now, we're here in winter, essentially. Mm-hmm. And this is a seasonal town. Mm-hmm. And everyone knows that, but you're doing okay through the winter?
Yeah, it will always scale back. Business drops, probably almost in half at times. Some days you scratch your head and you try to figure out what you've been doing wrong. But then you go back, look at your notes and look at your data and only to find out, well, you're still on track with where you were last year this time when there were no customers and you're doing a little better than you were before. But we're not the only person in that boat. So
it's not bad. It's, the locals that keep you going during the winter. And ever since we started, since day one, they've showed us support and got us through COVID. And we have a handful of superstars, but we have one customer when COVID hit. They came every single day that we were open, and they still continue to come. And if you're listening, you know who you are. So
I don't mind if you want to mention the name, but
Doug Brick.
Doug Brick has been to our place going on probably three years now without fail. If we had the trailer set up somewhere and we were set up at the restaurant, he would be at least one show at the restaurant and at least one show at
the restaurant. That's pretty amazing. Now, barbecue is a staple in this country, but there are many versions of barbecue. You're doing the Texas version.
It's more of a Texas influence. Like where I'm from, in Central Texas, there's a lot of different influences, and there's a lot of tug of war with who makes a better style of barbecue: East Texas, West Texas, South Texas, Central Texas. But the thing that gets our barbecue to where it is there's a lot of different influences from different parts of the country in my flavor profile.
Okay,
and I think that's what sets us apart.
Well, as you know, I'm a big fan of barbecue, your barbecue, so. And we're running short on time. Sure. The only thing I think we maybe have time to squeeze in is looking down the road a little bit.
Sure.
Do you have any plans? I think you're working on having a patio area.
Sure. We're just about done with our reservation-only private chef's table area and the back patio. That's going to be done soon, probably this winter. We're getting our alcohol license, and we'll have our covered seating area.
Beer
have
a nice, and wine with barbecue.
Absolutely. Really. Absolutely. We'll have a nice gazebo put in out front. That'll be the last of any structures that we're going to add out there, and a little bit more heating and covered seating out front.
Okay.
Put a nice little separation fence around the front patio.
Yeah. Okay. Well, unfortunately, we're basically out of time here.
No
problem. I'm really happy to hear that things are going well in your business. Thank you so much for being on the show. You have been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guests today have been Heather and Mike Harbin, owners of Mo Chili, our local barbecue joint up on Sims Way near one of the roundabouts. And I really look forward to continuing, and I like the idea of the patio and the seated area and all of that. It's just don't screw up the menu and add things that don't belong in a barbecue joint. That's my advice.
Not in the cards.
Okay, all right. In addition to thanking my guests, I also want to thank Taylor Clark, the editor-producer. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis, signing off for today. But please stay tuned for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.